Before we begin talking about Roseanne, we want to say unequivocally that Black Lives Matter, trans women are women, and trans men are men.
Islamophobia and anti-Semitism have no place in this world. Families belong together and out of cages.
No human being is illegal. Clean water, healthcare, and education are basic human rights.
We stand with workers and unions, and Nazis will always be bad. Hi.
Hello, Mara McAndrew. This is me, Catherine Kidd.
Oh, hi, Catherine Kidd. And welcome, everybody, to 714 Delaware Street.
That's correct. The podcast about Roseanne and the Conners.
Today's program...
And a smattering of other things, yes.
...is called Feel the Bernhard.
Yeah. We've been, you know, talking about all sorts of different things related to Roseanne, and also things about the world connected to specific episodes of Roseanne. But we wanted to give a little shout-out by way of episode dedicated to Sandra Bernhard and her performances on Roseanne.
Yeah, so I feel like she's always been one of my favorite people on Roseanne, just like one of the most memorable actresses. And I don't really know why that was, because when I was a kid, I think all I knew her from was Roseanne, but I still just thought she was, like, kind of hilarious and cool, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, when I was a kid, she was kind of one of the first, like, gay characters that I was ever really super familiar with on Roseanne, and also that she was gay IRL, as the kids say.
Right.
Made me sort of interested in her. Also, when I was, like, in junior high and high school, and for a large portion of my adult life, my best friend is a gay man. Mm-hmm. And she just appeals to gay men.
Right.
Well, as many do. So there was sort of always, like, an aesthetic about her that was specifically gay, but kind of, like, masculine and interesting, and I just was into it.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's interesting to think about, like, how many gay characters were there on TV before, like, Nancy's character?
Not very many.
Yeah, I mean, and it seems like not a lot of, like, I mean, obviously she's not a main character, but there were certain episodes here and there, maybe, but not a lot of recurring characters.
Right. Would you say that Nancy is, like, a bisexual character?
Yeah, I suppose that's true.
Bisexual people.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know. Well, and, yeah, when she's first on the show, there's, you know, she's presented as being straight, you know?
Right. Yeah. Although, I mean, Arnie is sort of his own species, so.
Right, true.
Well, yeah. And then she, you know, sort of, like, comes out, but. So there are, like, moments here and there where she and Arnie sort of reconnect, right? And then break up again and stuff. So maybe she's bisexual, although I think her character often identifies as gay once she comes out. So it's hard to know.
It is. Up in the air. Yeah, because she does talk about being a lesbian, like, later on, you know?
Right, right, yeah.
But, yeah. Well, and then there's, of course, like, the last episode where it's, like, she gets back together with Arnie. But, you know, we ignore that episode because a lot of
right.
weird things happen.
Yeah. Well, it was a fantasy. We can't take it seriously, obviously.
Right.
So, Sandra Bernhard is kind of a big deal in comedy. And it strikes me that, you know, a lot of people only know her from Roseanne. But she's been doing it for kind of a long time and was, like, really sort of well known for, I think, largely her performance in The Kings of Comedy, right?
Yeah, well, that was sort of the first big thing that she did. We started talking about this last week, I think it was, because I watched that for the first time. Because I had wanted to see that, And I had, and this is, yeah, The King of Comedy from 1983, Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro's in it. And, like, yes. I had wanted to see it for a long time because I heard, like, mixed things. It was kind of, like, one of those things where it's now considered a good movie, but at the time people were expecting, like, another Taxi Driver, and they were like, what is going right. on with this, you know?
Right, yeah.
But I had no idea, and I feel stupid, but I had no idea Sandra Bernhard was in it. And if I had known really? That, I probably would have watched it, like, a long time ago. Yeah, because I just heard about it. I knew it was Scorsese. I knew it was De Niro. But then I was like, oh, she has a really big part. So I yes. really enjoyed it
yeah. a lot. I think I just called it Kings of Comedy, which makes me feel embarrassed, but it is what it is. The oh, well, Kings okay. of Comedy is that, isn't that, like, a road doc of, like, Bernie Mac and...
Yeah, like Cedric the Entertainer.
Yeah. Never mind, she's not in that. She's not in that.
Right.
As far as I'm aware, I honestly haven't seen it.
Me yeah. neither.
And then another thing that I sort of watched a lot of in high school, which is kind of weird. Like, I don't think it's really geared or aimed toward high school students or high school age youths. But Without You, I'm Nothing was her one-woman show movie that was so weird
yeah.
and funny and probably shaped my sense of humor and also my weird, like, popular culture obsession from an early age.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I only saw that the first time probably, like, 5 years ago, and then I just really? Watched it again, yeah. I mean, I've always liked her, but again, it was kind of like, I don't really know where I got that from. It was just like, she's great on Roseanne. Maybe I had seen her, like, on Letterman and stuff, but I hadn't really
yes.
seen anything else that she had done. So, but yeah, that's so great. Although it's interesting because, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, it's really weird. And then there's, like, the whole thing where she's, like, playing black, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of difficult to, like, reconcile because I do think in some ways it's like a critique of minstrelsy or something, but it's also like on that line where it's like also just kind of minstrelsy, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's a strain of like weird entertainment of that time, I think, is like critiques of minstrelsy that do the same thing almost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is real weird. Although I think it also comes from... And this does not excuse it.
Right.
By any means. But it comes from a place of, like, real closeness and appreciation with, like, black popular culture in particular. Right. Like, I think that she immersed herself in black popular culture as a young person, as a young comedian, saw herself the most in, like, Richard Pryor, she's talked about,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, like, Prince and Nina Simone and all of those artists. And so, I mean, that's kind of true of everybody.
Right,
because
right.
black popular culture is so rich and good
mm-hmm.
and influential. So it's complicated.
It is complicated. It's hard. And, you know, I was reading, because I watched it again, and,
yeah,
you know, I was looking at reviews of it because I was trying to see how it was received at the time. And it's pretty mixed. Like, some people are like, yeah, this is... So even back then, you know, some people are like, oh, this is kind of offensive or whatever. But then, like, I really liked Roger Ebert's review, because Roger Ebert is always astute, but he was talking about how, like, he thought it was, like... He says it's set in lounge act hell. Like, she's making fun of yes. all these different lounge acts. And, like, people who are trying to, like... He says it's, like, in the tradition of obscure performers who try to wrap the mantle of greatness around themselves.
Right.
So I kind of liked that take on it. And he was saying, like, I didn't really enjoy it, but, like, I could really appreciate it when it was over, like, what she was trying to do.
Yes. That's amazing. Well, I think she does that a lot. Like, she rides this line between, like, total earnestness and, like, joking about, like, mediocrity aiming toward greatness.
Mm-hmm. And I guess we should say, you know, if anyone, for those who haven't seen it, so it basically, it's kind of like a series of performances in different characters. And sometimes right. she's singing, and sometimes she's, like, kind of telling stories, which is sort of like her stand-up
That's
style.
Her whole MO anyway. Yeah.
Like these monologues. And, like, what I love about the monologues and Without You I'm Nothing is, you know, they're, like, sort of these cliches about American life. You know, like, when she tells the story about, like, a day in the life of, like, as an adolescent, the perfect nuclear family, and, like,
yes.
the woman moving to the big city to become a secretary, and, like, having an affair with her boss. And it's just this
right.
kind of slow building of momentum and these really, like, specific details. And it's so hard to explain if a person hasn't seen her do it, but it's just really amazing.
Yeah, and just, like, there's the overwrought, like, renderings of songs that are, like, almost impossible to sit through in a way.
Yes.
And she sings through all of it, and she always sings in her stand-up. And her voice is not great, but it's also not bad, which makes me feel really connected to it. Like, it feels like a moment, you know, when I'm up in my feelings at home. Like,
once well, she can actually sing, like, you know.
Yeah. Closing my eyes and just, like, feeling the moment, but just, like, a little too much, like, it's a little too intimate. It's like a person sitting at home talking to themselves and, like, imagining themselves on a stage performing in all of these various roles. Like, the performance itself is kind of mediocre, but everything else about it is kind of, like, stellar.
Mm-hmm.
But also really overwrought. So, like, her, you know, introduction to her rendering of Me and Mrs. Jones.
Right,
where
yeah.
she's just like, me. And Mrs. Jones. Just like,
when she's got like her eyes like, closed and like, and there's yes. the one where she's like wearing the headscarf.
It's the Nina Simone song.
Is that the Nina Simone one?
Yeah.
And it's, but it is kind of, I mean, it is kind of hilarious.
For women.
She's just like so into it. Like, she's like this white woman who really believes that she's feeling those emotions and, like, that history,
right.
you know?
Yes.
And you
yes.
can tell even from yes. her expressions that that's what she's doing, you know, that...
Yeah.
She's
making fun of it, but she also is feeling it. And
right.
it's like...
Yeah.
It's... Yeah. But that's Nina Simone's Four Women. The,
That's right.
My
that's what
skin
it was.
Is brown.
That's right.
That one.
Oh, yeah.
So, if any performance in it is potentially a problem, it's that one,
yeah. But it's so overt that you have to be like, I mean, you can still be offended by it, obviously, but it's also like you have to acknowledge that at least it's an attempt at mocking that kind of thing.
Right, yeah. She's something else.
Yeah, and then there's the end when she's, like, wearing a G-string and dancing to Little Red Corvette.
Right. Which has been, for many years, my absolute favorite song.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It is, like, perfect. She's such a weird person.
Well, and I was reading about how she got cast in The King of Comedy, because before that she was just basically, you know, a stand-up. For, I don't
yeah.
know, maybe, like, since the late 70s. And
yeah.
I guess, you know, Scorsese had auditioned all of these women. And she said, I mean, I don't know how true this is, but she said, like, oh, Meryl Streep was up for it, all these people. And they just couldn't find the right person. And her friend was, like, involved with the production, was like, oh, you should come audition. And she was just, like, the only person for the role. And when you watch the film, you're like, yeah, because she plays basically this obsessed fan of Jerry Lewis, who...
Right.
You know, ends up being part of this kidnapping plot with Robert De Niro, and, like, they basically, like, wrap him up with tape, like, tape
yes.
him to a chair, and she's like, it's a very big role. Like, she's giving this monologue for a really long time to him, and they're, like, at a candlelit dinner, and he's sitting there covered in duct tape, you know? And she's like,
yes, yes.
She's like, oh, I just want to go crazy. I just want to, like, rip my clothes off, and... It's very Sandra, and she sings also, you know, during that scene.
Yeah. I haven't seen that in years, and I think I might have been high when I did see it, but I do remember that part, just like, and you can hear it, you can hear her saying that. Like, I just want to go crazy.
Yeah. That's really perfect for her. I mean, yeah, how could they choose anyone else for that role? Masha.
Well, it's good they didn't. If they had, it would have been a movie also, but different.
Yes, that's right.
And then we might not have had Sandra Bernhardt as Nancy on Roseanne, although, you know, I'm not sure I believe in that whole butterfly effect thing.
Right. Wasn't that a movie with Ashton Kutcher?
It absolutely was, which I saw in the movie theater.
Did you? Was it good?
Yes. No.
I don't know that I've ever seen a movie with Ashton Kutcher in it.
I can't think of any others. Yeah. Can you?
He was in that one with Brittany Murphy. Uh-huh. It was called Just Married. And I never saw it, but I remember it because there was, like, this big thing about how they were dating, and I think it was totally fake to promote the movie.
Oh,
I was
sure,
like,
of course. Yeah.
Brittany Murphy and Ashton Kutcher, that doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. R.I.P. Brittany.
I know. Ugh.
So sad.
She was very talented. Ooh. I loved her as good. Luann on King of the Hill.
Right. And she was also, do you remember her, like, very small role in Freeway?
Yeah, I do.
Where she was Reese Witherspoon's cellmate who, like, wanted to make out.
Yes, I do. That was a pretty early, that was early Britney.
Super early Britney, yeah. And then, of course, Clueless.
Girl Interrupted. And
Girl Interrupted.
And 8 Mile.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I didn't actually ever see that. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I mean, it was not that memorable. I saw it in the theater because I mean at the time I was kind of excited about it. I don't know why. But
yeah,
Brittany, well, was pretty
supposed
good.
To be good. Oh, Drop Dead Gorgeous is one that she's in that's amazing.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's among my favorites of all time.
It is good. It's a classic.
Yeah. So Sandra Bernhardt she's born in 1955, and she's actually born in Flint, Michigan, which is something that I knew and then I kind of forgot, but I was, like, looking, you know, at pictures of her and stuff, reading about her, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. Which we were just talking about a few minutes ago kind of makes sense because she seems to have kind of an understanding of, like, a working class background, even though a lot of her performances and a lot of, like, what she does seems in some ways, but there are kernels of the opposite, really sort of like couture, like wealth oriented, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but she has this like foundation of like, you know, working class, Rust Belt Jewish family, mm-hmm. that I think makes sense in terms of like connecting her to Roseanne Barr.
Right. I don't know when they became friends, but that's why she ended up on the show, because she and Roseanne were friends. And they have been friends for a long time. I mean, she came back for the reboot, but then she basically said that she'd had it with Roseanne or something. Like, that was, I think, her only comment after the, you know, scandal.
The racist comment. Well, how could you not have had it? They have been friends for a long time, and actually, did you ever watch Roseanne's, like, reality show, Roseanne's Nuts?
No, I didn't.
I might have talked about it on this podcast before, but, yeah, there was a time when she was on it, and I think, like, she and Roseanne got high and went to dinner with Carol Channing or something, if I remember correctly, and it was pretty funny.
That sounds
interesting.
Entertaining.
Yeah, but after the whole Valerie Jarrett thing and the cancellation, she was not super personal, but was just like, that's it, you know. Like, Roseanne brought this on herself, you know, I've kind of had it with her. And she said a lot about her performance in season 10, like that episode being kind of cut a lot, so she was barely in the episode, but that's not really what they made when they went in, sort of.
Yeah, so. I was wondering why she was in that so little, because I was like, it's Nancy. Like, we all want to see Nancy. Why would you put her in it for, like, 2 seconds? It's like, ugh, it reminds me of, and I won't go on too long of a tangent about this, but on the new X-Files, which is extremely uneven, mostly very bad, but, like, they had this one episode where they were like, we're bringing back the lone gunman. Obviously, they're all dead. I mean, spoiler alert for people who haven't seen the original X-Files. The lone gunman die, but they were, like, going to come back in a dream or whatever. And they came back in, like, Mulder's hallucination, and they were literally there for, like, it was probably less than, like, 15 seconds. And then they were off screen. And I was just like, you're going to bring them back to do that? Like, they don't even say anything? I was so depressed.
That's such a bummer. What the hell is that? You just want to prove that the actors are still alive?
I guess. It's just like, you can't show me Ferengi and then take him away without having him say anything.
Right. Come on, writers. That's weird.
I know. It's so
and perhaps weird. They did cut it. But
yeah,
like,
that's what I imagine happened. But, you know, why? Because that episode wasn't very good, so they could have spent some time in the Lone Gunman, but...
Huh. Back to the drawing board, kids.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm so imperious. I don't know anything. Yeah, that sucks. Well, she still tours, which I think is amazing. Not because she's old. She's not that old. But she does still tour. I've actually seen her live twice. The first time I saw her live in Denver, and it was an audience of definitely of people who were like suburban Coloradans, you know, in the suburbs of Denver coming in because they saw that this woman who was on Roseanne or used to be on TV was coming.
Was
and they
it like
were
a
like,
casino or something, or was it like a real theater show?
I think it was a theater show. I cannot remember where it was, to be frank with you. But it was sort of a circular stage or a horseshoe, like, audience. So there...
Right, so probably not a casino. I was just curious.
It was not a big show. And she had, like, a guitar player, you know, some, like, acoustic guitar lesbian who was really pretty good and did a lot of singing. But she also was, like, mad at the audience. Because there were very few, it wasn't an audience full of, like, you know, gay men and, like, effete lesbians.
Right.
You know, which is kind
the dream
of
what audience.
Which is the dream audience, yeah. I think for her, anyway, it was, like, suburban moms and dads. And she kind of was, like, railing on the audience because they weren't like laughing and everyone seemed really puzzled. Hmm. And then on her next like spoken word comedy stand-up album during her set, she like talks about that show.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like railing on, you know, this like audience of dads in like khaki cargo shorts.
Gosh, why did they go to that? So strange.
It was really strange. I mean, It was pretty rough because it really did seem like nobody really knew who she was.
Maybe they got free tickets. Sometimes like corporations give tickets away. It's a real mistake.
Yeah, not nobody knew who she was, but like
right,
the audience was definitely like well populated with people who are kind of oblivious to what her comedy is outside of TV.
Right.
But yeah, so, and then the second time was in Pittsburgh, actually, and it was a similar kind of thing. She did a lot of, like, singing and, you know, talking about her relationships with celebrities in these funny ways and stuff. And then she had, like, she was out in the, like, foyer after the show for autograph signing and stuff, which I could kind of tell she hated.
Oh, really?
And I felt really bad about it, sort of.
Did you talk to her? Did you get her to sign something?
Yes, there's a photo of me and Sandra Bernhardt on my Facebook.
That's awesome. I want to see it. Gosh, when was that? I should have gone.
I want to say it was like 2000, probably 13 or something.
Oh, maybe I wasn't there anymore.
Maybe it was longer ago than that. I should really look. Anyway...
Well, it's funny that you should talk about her being, like, sort of aggressive to the audience because that was another thing from Roger Ebert's review that I really liked. He said, he talks about, well, here's the quote. He says, the point of the movie is that she believes herself beautiful and seductive and irresistible, and she insists that we feel the same way. There is naked aggression here, the resentment that is usually buried in lounge act patter. So, and I think that really captures it, because that's what I love about her, is like her just like aggression, like about those sorts of things. It's really awesome.
I mean, aggressive is a really good way to describe it.
And like, you know, so, and she exhibits that a lot when she's on Letterman, which I was just watching.
Yeah.
Some blessed soul has put every one of her Letterman appearances together in a YouTube video. So I was watching that, and she just has such a great rapport with Dave. I mean, it's really great because she's like so relaxed, and she's not really doing bits, but like she's just so naturally funny. But she has some of that like aggression, and she'll just start singing or whatever and like take over the show, you know.
Yeah.
And there's the great episode where she brings Madonna on because they became friends. And that's such a classic. Well, I guess they were rumored to be dating or something.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know.
Which, I mean, I can imagine that, like, Madonna milked that, right? She was always looking for things to be paid attention to for. That was passive voice, English teacher.
Right. To make her seem more interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and frankly, I did. I mean, people watched and paid attention and cared about it and stuff. And then I guess they had, like, a falling out because Madonna actually did start dating one of Sandra Bernhardt's ex-girlfriends.
Oh, Ingrid? Really?
Yeah, something. Do you remember that? Well, as a gay, I remember it.
I didn't know about that. But, of course, I've seen her in Truth or Dare, which I love.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, but that character, you know, when she's in Without You, I'm Nothing, when they introduce Shoshana.
Right, yeah, that's a Madonna and it's like, thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it's hard to know if it's like, and I think it might be a bit of both, like everything she does, like a harsh critique and, you know, an appreciation and a sort of solidarity with.
So she's
She's still also does a lot of like television guest starring too. Like she's recently been on Broad City and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and she was on American Horror Story Apocalypse, which I actually haven't watched. And of course she was a somewhat regular for at least a couple seasons on The L Word, which was back in the day. It's been a while now, but
I know that seems recent to me, but it's like no, it's not recent at all.
No, it's not recent. But yeah, so she's still doing it, and she actually has a daily podcast. Can you imagine that?
Oh my gosh. So is it a podcast or is it like a serious radio show kind of thing? Or
yes.
Like XM?
Well, yes. It is that. Okay. But it's called Sandyland, and she you know, interviews cool, fun comics and celebs and other things and talks about stuff and is as always commensurate professional.
Yes. Did you know that, and you probably do, but I was reading this online, that she turned down the role of Miranda on Sex and the City because she thought the script was bad?
I did not know that, and it makes me smile inside.
Yeah, it's really funny because just to imagine that show, but Robert and I were talking about it, we were like, it would be totally different because I feel like if Sandra Bernhardt was Miranda, then Samantha couldn't have been, like, Samantha. Because she would be, like, Samantha and Miranda both, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, and God bless Cynthia Nixon. She's doing a pretty good job.
Yeah, she was good. I mean, you know, I still like Sex and the City. It's got its ups and downs.
Yeah. So many people that I love and care for really love Sex and the City all the way through. I thought the first season was outstanding, and then I just was like, okay, I've done this.
I never watched it when it was really on, but, like, right after college when I moved to New York, my friend had the DVDs, and we would just watch them when we were, like, hungover. And it was enjoyable, but it's not something I ever care to revisit. I just, you know, like, and Carrie was annoying. I kind of like Samantha. That was basically the
Charlotte end. Was always my favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't mind Charlotte.
Cutest.
She's cute.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just thought Kim Cattrall was pretty funny.
She is fucking funny. Yeah, and they have had quite a beef, her and Sarah Jessica Parker. I wish I didn't know that, but they do.
I did too, yeah. I just feel like...
Oh, gossip.
It seems like they were kind of mean to Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, it sounds like they didn't quite treat her well. But, you know, it's hard to know.
It is. It is hard
to know. She also has railed kind of maniacally online at Sarah Jessica Parker, and it makes you wonder if she also is maybe a little prima donna. Lord help me. I wish that I didn't know that this was inside me. I'm a gossip.
Well, yeah, it's just like, why talk about it, you know? But I do appreciate that she didn't want to do another Sex and the City movie, because she's correct. There shouldn't be any more. They were all
oh
bad.
My God. Bad, bad, bad. Yeah.
She's the only one that was right about that.
She was so great in Mannequin.
I know. Was she in Mannequin 2 on the move, or just Mannequin 1?
I don't know. You'd have to look that up. On the move? That's amazing.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I feel like it's always on TV, and it's like Mannequin 2, on the move.
Is it? I love the colon, like, da-da-da 2, colon something weird.
Right, like Babe Boogaloo.
Right, or Babe Pig in the City.
Right.
Which, by the way, is very strange.
Or Garfield, Tale of Two Kitties.
Right.
Very clever.
Exactly. Should we get on the train?
Yeah, let's move on. I think I've said all I need to say about trivia about Sandra Bernhard. Now we can talk about Roseanne.
Yeah, her performances on Roseanne. She shows up in season 4.
Yes. Which is really a great time for Roseanne. It's like, it's really hitting its stride in season 4.
Yeah. Yeah, I think seasons 4 through 6 are my absolute favorite.
Like, as soon as Darlene becomes, like, has gone through puberty, I feel like that's like,
yeah,
this is great. Yeah, it's perfect. There's like a brief time where she is, you know, like, in high school, and Becky's still around. Like, Lisey Gordonson is still around. And that's, like, the best era, in my opinion.
Yeah, when Becky and Mark are, like, really dyed-in-the-wool, like, together but not married. Becky's still around.
Mm-hmm.
Mark's around. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good times. So Nancy shows up because, and she's talked about before she actually is seen on the show, because she's dating Arnie. And there's, like, one episode where they talk about how he's, like, buying, he, like, bought her breast implants or something.
Right, yes. He borrows money from Dan.
That's right.
And it ends up being for breast implants.
And yeah, Arnie is played Nancy. By Tom Arnold. I'm assuming everyone knows that, but just to clarify.
Yes.
And I sort of, you know, Arnie, like, look, Tom Arnold kind of sucks, but, like, Arnie is, I kind of like him as a character. I think he's kind of a good friend for Dan, because he's just, like, different from anybody else on the show, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's portrayed in a really funny way, and he seems to have, like, this good heart, but he's, you know, dumb, which they kind of make that joke about, like, all the guys, except for, like, Chuck and Fred and stuff, but, like, he's, you know, a doofus.
But yeah,
and
he's kind of like, he's never does anything that you think is, like, really toxic or anything like that. I mean, or that I remember.
Right. Isn't the first episode with him on it the one where he, like, kisses Roseanne? And she's like, Arnie kissed me!
That's
whoa!
Right.
Yeah. And there, she's, like, trying to figure out what to do about it, what to think about it, whether she should tell Dan, you know, and whether she should say something to Arnie. You know, and she's, like, flattered and freaked out at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really interesting. I don't go around kissing other people on the, like, neck. It was the neck, not the lips.
Yeah, that is weird. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like that happens a lot on TV and in movies. Like, people just kissing people suddenly, and I feel like that never happens in real life. And when it does, it's a political scandal, like Al Franken or something.
Right.
Forced kissing.
Well, yeah. I think I've kissed someone without asking, but, like, it was gonna happen. But I've definitely mostly been like, can I kiss you on the lips?
I know, yeah. Yeah, it's hard to just, like, do it. It's scary.
Yeah. Well, and also, there's a really good chance that they're gonna move away at the wrong moment, or, like, they're gonna, you know, turn their head and you're gonna, like, bonk noses and...
Right, right.
But yeah, he kind of, like, crosses boundaries a little bit, but not... He just seems to have, like, good intentions, and that's kind of gross to say, but, like, yeah, he's just not evil. He's
right.
Like, he's good and dumb.
Yeah, which is why Dan is friends with him, because he wouldn't be friends with someone who was so awful.
Right.
And so in season, well, in season four, in the these episodes are called Vegas, and then Vegas, and it's really just a, it's kind of like one episode, but it's like a to-be-continued kind of thing. I mean, I don't know if they say that, but, so Arnie and Nancy are getting married in Vegas, and they kind of show up at the Connor house and are like, hey, you guys should come with us, you know, we want you to be best man and maid of honor. Maybe they said best man and best woman. I think they say that.
Best man and best woman, yes. Yeah, they say that.
And Nancy's just like, I'm official. It's official. I'm settling for Arnie.
Yeah, and then Arnie says, I said I was going to wait to get married until I have money set aside. And Nancy's dad gave me $5,000 never to see her again.
That's right. And so they do this thing where they always fight, and then they start to make out really, like, furiously. Yeah, like,
the litany of insults followed by the, like, serious, like, jaw-breaking face-mashing.
And then Nancy's like, he rules my world.
Which is so funny, because they're, like, walking away. And she's Sandra Bernhardt, and she's, like, you know, dressed in, like, very flattering, tight clothing, you know, mm-hmm. and has this, like, small town elegance thing in her character, and like Tom Arnold has like saggy butt, baggy jeans.
I know. You know,
they like walk away, and it just like makes no sense. But it's a little bit like, I mean, she has a sort of Peg Bundy look. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Kind of, although not at nearly as made up or caricatured, but like, you know, the saggy butt thing and the Will.
Yeah, they make it work because she's, like, enough of an oddball, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's so weird.
And I love Nancy's clothes. I think she's definitely the best dressed character on Roseanne, and she's always wearing something totally cool.
Yeah.
And a lot of her stuff is, like, totally in now. I was saying to Robert, like, can't you see your students wearing that? Like, she comes in, like, this cropped, like, crop top and, like, mom jeans. Mm-hmm.
Well, she, at one point in this episode, is wearing, like, tight tights that have, like, cards on them.
Yeah, like playing cards. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
And so they do go to Vegas, and there's, you know, this scene where she's playing the slot machines with Roseanne, and it's kind of the first time we see them as friends, and they have, like, a little heart-to-heart, and she's like, well, how'd you end up getting engaged to Arnie? And Nancy's like, well, you know, he came over to read the meter, and he was peeping in the blinds at me. It was so perverted. So we started dating. And she's like, before I knew it, he was living in my car.
Yes. Yeah. I love the way she says that. Like, it was so perverted. So we started dating. Like, their whole relationship is kind of based on them being, like, mutually, like, grotesque about like relationships and sex. Like, they're weird and like creepy, you know, that she's like attracted to that and he's attracted to that.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
And she talks about her boob job, and she's like, I wanted Jamie Lee Curtis, Arnie wanted Adrienne Barbeau, but I didn't have enough skin.
Yes,
so many great Nancy lines.
So and really she comes in.
It's really fun to see Roseanne having this kind of girl talk with someone besides Jackie, because we haven't really seen a lot of that. I mean, Crystal, but, like, I feel like Nancy is kind of a more interesting friend for Roseanne, because she's different from, like, all the other people that she knows.
Yeah, it's like, at this point in their relationship, there's just not as much at stake. They're, like, friendly, they're, like, good for hanging out, but, like, you know, everybody has to take care of Crystal. You know, mm-hmm. Crystal has this, like, depression.
Yeah, she's and, like, very, like, sensitive and easily wounded.
Yeah, and they have, like, this deep, long history. They know all about each other, kind of like with Jackie, too. Like, Jackie and Roseanne are sisters, and so there's, like, a lot at stake. But with Nancy, it's, at this point in their relationship, it's so easy. Like, they're just, Nancy's, like, funny and fun and weird and a little bit gross, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a way that, like, Dan and Roseanne can, like, compare themselves to Nancy and Arnie and be like, whew, we're okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and the whole sort of subplot of this episode, well, it's really the main plot, is that Roseanne and Dan are sort of having problems, just bickering, and, like, Roseanne's kind of feeling, like, annoyed with just, like, being married to Dan and, like, how boring marriage is. And, you know, they're seeing Nancy and Arnie get married and they're, like, rethinking, you know, that whole thing.
Right, yeah. Well, originally, like, the whole episode starts because, like, Dan's trying to get a little extra sleep, and he wakes up because they're all being loud at breakfast, and he and Roseanne are just, like, fighting like crazy, and then Dan originally doesn't want to go to Vegas because they can't afford to close the shop for 2 days, and Roseanne's like, no, I want to go, and they just, like, fight about that, and then they decide to go, and they're, like, screaming at each other, a second honeymoon!
Yeah.
So, they're, like, emotions are running high, and this is supposed to relax them, but they're there with Nancy and Arnie, and they kind of can't get any alone time. And when they do, they get in the big fight that ends the first episode, because they're, like, screaming at each other in the hotel room, and Roseanne's like, we should have gone on separate vacations. I'd go to Vegas, and you'd go to hell.
Right.
Like, she slams the door, and he slams the door, and then it says, to be continued.
Yeah.
Oh! Emotional.
I know, I hate it when they fight. I just want them to be happy. But it's nice, because then she gets to go hang out with Nancy in the casinos and just, like, unload all of her shit. And Nancy's like, men are pigs. That's not news.
Yes. Right. Well, and her experience should tell us all about that.
Right.
But then, like, in the second episode, Vegas, Vegas, like, Roseanne spills the beans that Jackie and Arnie had sex. And so that's, like, a big issue, too.
Right.
You know, because Nancy's like, mad and disgusted, and, you know, there's, like, a little conflict over that, but they, you know, they work it out, and they get tickets, because Roseanne wants to see Wayne Newton so bad.
Mm-hmm. And then they find out that it's going to be an impersonator, not actually Wayne Newton that night.
Right. Yeah. Well, they didn't get tickets to see him, and Arnie makes him go to this, like, timeshare sales.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah.
Free tickets. And they get tickets to the impersonator show, which is so funny. And Roseanne's so pissed off. You know, she came all the way out there and it didn't work out. That's all she wanted.
But then the real Wayne Newton comes out and Roseanne is really drunk and she and Nancy are, like, heckling him and stuff.
Yes.
And
yeah.
Dan's like, shh, who better? It's really him.
Yeah, co-heckle the real Wayne Newton with Sandra Bernhard.
I know, it's so much fun.
The dorky, like, Wayne Newton impersonator that starts the show, like, he looks like a young version of old Wayne Newton. But he doesn't actually look like young Wayne Newton.
Right, no, I could see that. Interesting.
Like, yeah, young Wayne Newton has, like, a very, very wide face. I did some research.
So no one would buy that was actually young Wayne Newton.
There's no way. He looks like a young version of old Wayne Newton, but not actually young Wayne Newton, if that makes sense.
It does.
So, yeah, but Roseanne's really drunk and just insists that it's not Wayne Newton, and they're yelling and, you know, you suck, and you don't sound anything like Wayne Newton. Where's your mustache?
Right.
They get kicked out. It's so good.
Yeah, and so the episode ends with Nancy and Arnie getting married. They're not really fighting that much, you know, about the whole
right.
Jackie thing. They're kind of let it go, and it's silly. And then they are like, oh, we paid for you guys to renew your vows. And it's so sweet of them, actually.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Because then they're, like, allowed, and they give these, like, really practical vows, like, I vow to wash my shirts if you promise not to buy me, like, dorky-looking shirts anymore.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of nice. So they make up and everything.
Yeah. I mean, they are, like, soulmates, a match made in heaven. The best. I think we should talk about Nancy's wedding shorts leisure suit.
Yeah, it's like a gold lamé jumper. Unitard sort of, yeah.
It's amazing. And then awesome. Arnie comes in a gold lamé jacket, and she's like, you can't wear that. And he thinks the cummerbund is a blindfold, which is really funny.
Oh, yeah.
But they actually match, and they both look fucking ridiculous, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty great. But then, you know, their union is somewhat short-lived.
Yeah.
Because by season 5, they're broken up. Arnie leaves, and he makes up this excuse that he got abducted by aliens.
Right, yeah. She did, remember?
Yes, of course. It was for real. Well, we already watched that episode, and I can't remember why. So right. that's just happened. So, you know, it's a short-lived union. Did you, and you watched another episode with Nancy?
Shortly after the Vegas stuff is another bowling episode, actually, which we've talked about this episode tangentially a bunch of times.
Right.
It's listed, the name of the show on the streaming service that we watch it from is Bowling, but the actual name of the episode is The Bowling Show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one where, you know, we're just sort of being introduced to Nancy, and, like, the writers are really laying it in thick, because Sandra Bernhardt ends up being, like, a major character throughout the series. And it's one where Dan and Arnie are on a bowling league team together, and they're, like, basically the worst team in the league.
Yeah.
And so, like, and everybody's hanging out at the bowling alley, and Nancy and Jackie are, like, becoming friends, and Roseanne is so jealous.
Yeah, because she feels like she's not being included. Because don't they make plans to go do something without her, too?
Yes, they make plans to go ice skating.
Oh, yeah, that sounds really fun. And bowling does. Man, these people have fun.
They have a great time. But, so they don't invite Roseanne, and Roseanne's so upset. And finally, you know, it's very evident that Roseanne is mad. But Jackie's like, I know when you're really mad versus when you're just being you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really mad, you won't even look me in the eye, you know. She's like, I am not mad. Really, really mad. And then they're like, we didn't invite you because the last time you went ice skating, you fell down and hurt your back, and you said you never wanted to go again. And then they, like, invite her because she's having a pity party. And then she's like, well, maybe we could go to the movies instead.
Right.
And they're like, we're going ice skating. But, yeah, it's pretty funny because, like, it starts to, like, bubble up when Nancy actually calls Jackie at Roseanne and Dan's house.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, since when are you friends with Nancy? You know, so you slept with Arnie and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
The best line, since we're talking about Nancy lines, though, in this, is pertaining to Arnie wanting Nancy to get pregnant. There's, like, a running sort of plot line about wanting Nancy to get pregnant. And Sandra Bernhardt goes, Arnie's on my back to have a baby. And Roseanne goes, well, maybe one of these days he'll get it right.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
You know, it's about anal sex.
You can't have a baby that way.
Usually not.
It might be possible.
I don't think so.
So another big Nancy episode is Ladies' Choice in season 5. And so this is after the episode where Arnie and Nancy break up, and she has joined Roseanne and Jackie and Bev in opening the Land for Lunchbox. So they're like working.
Yay!
So that's when Nancy really, you know, her place becomes solidified. She's like good enough friend to be part of their team, which is really cool. And so they're kind of fixing up the building. They haven't opened the restaurant yet, but they're talking about how depressed Nancy is about Arnie breaking up with her. And she's like, no one understands my pain. And, like, Roseanne's trying to fix her up with more of Dan's friends. And she's got this amazing bomber jacket, this, like, silky bomber jacket that she wears in earlier episodes, too. And it's just so awesome. And I love it. And I want it.
Yeah. It's, like, made for a person with, like, a really, really, really short abdomen and, like, the longest legs in history.
I know. If I wore it, I would just look like a boy. But you know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's not really the look I'm going for. So
I'm way too short for all of that.
Yeah, Nancy can pull it off, but
yeah.
So Roseanne's like trying to fix Nancy up, and finally she's like, "Well, I'm seeing someone." She doesn't really want to tell them, and then she's like, "Her name is Marla. Like, I'm seeing a woman." And Roseanne and Jackie kind of don't believe her, and they like start laughing.
Nuh-uh.
And Nancy's like, "I'm serious. I'm gay." Like, she actually says that. And Jackie's like, "We went to all those singles dances together."
Right. Yeah, Jackie's having a little bit of an internal crisis because she's like, "We hung out all those times."
Yeah, and so then Nancy tells them about Marla and how she met her at the cosmetics counter at Rodbell's. And another good Nancy-Roseanne exchange, Nancy said, "She does makeovers." And Roseanne said, "She's certainly thorough."
Yes. Oh, man. Yeah. And so the big reveal is that Marla is, like, an actress that you would never guess would be this character, which is Morgan Fairchild.
Yes. And you know what's funny is I was watching Sandra Bernhard on Letterman before we talked tonight, and she talks about Morgan Fairchild, and this is before she was on Roseanne with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're talking about Morgan Fairchild, I don't know, she said something about how you have to learn to smile down so that you don't get wrinkles. So if you're going to be in show business, you have to smile down. And so Sandra's trying to, like, figure out what that is, and Letterman's like, "You know, so can you smile down for us?" And she's, like, making all these faces, like, and she's talking about Morgan Fairchild. She's like, "She was on Paper Dolls. Like, that was so amazing. She was Racine."
Yeah.
And then later, right, well, she was going to perform opposite her, and she had no idea.
So amazing. Yeah, well, I mean, she's been on so many things, but, like, she was originally on a soap opera, I think.
And she's on Dallas, too.
Yes, exactly, yeah. She's on Dallas and then on Falcon Crest.
I was reading a little bit about her, too, and she has a book. There was a great quote on IMDb. Her IMDb page is hilarious. Like, I don't know who wrote it, but it's like a Morgan Fairchild superfan. But it's just like, "Morgan has shared some of her beauty secrets by authoring the book Superlooks, which is a complete guide that includes makeup, exercise, and diet tips." And I looked it up and I was like, "Oh my god, I have to get this book." Like, it's just so 80s, and it's called Super Looks, which doesn't even make sense. That's probably where she talks about smiling down.
I cannot wait to read that. I need to learn how to smile down because I'm wrinkling up like, whoa.
I know, but you know, you don't want to get frown lines, so I don't understand. I've got to hear more from Morgan on this.
Maybe I just have to have no emotions.
That's right. So. But now you have, now there's Botox, which makes it so that you don't have emotions.
Yeah. I don't want that, actually. I'm not against it. I mean, it's just one of those things people do. But I don't think I would like it.
Yeah.
She's going to be on, she was on Days of Our Lives for a while, a couple of years ago.
Oh.
That was like kind of her sort of return to TV-ish. And she's been on things here and there. Like, for one episode.
But she's also been Friends, you know, playing Chandler's mom.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Chandler Bing. I totally forgot about that. But she was on, or she's going to be on, excuse me, she's going to be on The Worst Cooks in America. And I keep seeing ads for this on maybe YouTube. It's one of the things I watch that has ads.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? I have not.
No.
But it's like a special celebrity edition of The Worst Cooks in America.
Is she going to be cooking, or is she like a judge or something?
She's going to be cooking.
Oh.
That's and fun. You know who else is going to be on this season of this show that I have never watched in my life, but I'm kind of interested in it now? Is Tonya Harding.
Really?
Yes.
They know their audience.
Yes.
I feel like it's geared toward very specific people, a.k.a. us.
Yeah. Well, and Jim J. Bullock. Do you remember Jim J. Bullock?
The name is familiar.
He's an actor. He's an excremingly. He's a very gay, like, effeminate gay man who was on, like, a lot of shows in the 80s. It's actually on an episode of Roseanne called Satan Darling. He was, like, I think good friends with Tammy Faye Baker.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Gosh, I can't picture him, but I probably know him if I saw him.
Yeah, well, and I thought I remembered him being... He was in Spaceballs.
Oh, well, I love Spaceballs.
Also.
Who do you play in Spaceballs?
He was Prince Valium.
Oh, right, okay. Now I'm getting a better picture in my mind.
Yeah, but he was on this TV show in the early to mid, late 80s-ish called Too Close for Comfort, which ran for a whole, like, full run. Well, I think it had 7 seasons.
Wow.
And I watched a couple of times, and it's just, like, deeply forgettable.
Hmm.
But yeah, like, he was sort of a dyed-in-the-wool stalwart of 80s sitcom television.
So he's going to be on this cooking show with Morgan Fairchild and Tanya Harding.
Yes.
Morgan, why is she doing that? She seems too famous.
I know. It's really strange. But I guess, you know, maybe she likes cooking TV and was like, yeah, I'll do that. That sounds fun. I mean, why not?
Right? Sure. She can do what she wants.
She fucking can. Excuse my language. I'm sorry.
No, it's explicit. We're expected to curse.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few other people, but those were the ones that sort of stuck out to me as, like, whoa, okay, cool.
So, yeah, in this episode, I'm trying to think, I mean, there's not a whole lot else to it, but it is, like, Nancy-centric in that, like, it's basically Roseanne and Jackie trying to, like, come to terms with it, but it's more Jackie. She's just like, oh my gosh, I'm going to feel so weird about around Nancy. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, Roseanne's just kind of like, oh, whatever, like, but... And Roseanne's making fun of Jackie because Jackie's like, how could we not have known Nancy's a lesbian? And Roseanne says, well, she doesn't look like a lesbian. Lesbians are truck drivers who wear flannel shirts and jeans. And, like, that's what Jackie's wearing.
Yes. Oh, that's so perfect.
So, yeah. They, you know, they're not really seriously that upset about it, I think. At least Roseanne isn't. You know, she's kind of, like, joking about it.
Yeah.
But they do act really weird with Morgan Fairchild, and she comes in to the lunchbox. They're just, like, being all awkward around her, you know?
Yeah. It's a very femme-femme relationship, this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's very interesting. I mean, Morgan Fairchild, of all people. I always thought it was so odd, and I love it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, like, an unconventional choice, right? Like, they didn't go, like, the stereotypical route, like a lot of sitcoms might have.
Right. I guess, I mean... Were there any, like, sort of butchy, like, actresses they could... I mean, they could have... Morgan Fairchild's not a lesbian, as far as I'm aware.
Right.
Could they have had a straight actress play a butch lesbian? I don't know, like, how that would go. I mean, like, frankly, I just don't think straight actresses ever play butch.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably right.
Butch actresses will sometimes play butch-ish. But it's TV butch, not butch-butch.
Right. Well, it's hard to think of anyone, you know, that they would have cast in that role that was, like, known. You know what I mean? Besides,
right,
I mean, like,
maybe
they could have just gone with someone who wasn't really known. But...
Well, I think it's wonderful that it's Morgan Fairchild, because it's just, like, adds to how jarring it is, you know, for them. It's like this, like looks exactly like a 1960s Barbie doll.
Right.
Like, actress, you know?
Well, and I think, you know, Roseanne, they like to take any opportunity to kind of take golden age, like, TV stuff and twist it, you know? And this is just another example of that. Like,
that's
let's
exactly
take it. This sort of icon of, like, soap operas and make her a lesbian, you know?
Right. Just like when they have Joan Collins on as, like, Cousin Ronnie, you know, it's like this, like, you know, character from fucking Dynasty playing, like, this nouveau riche character.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it really makes sense, too, going back to Sandra Bernhard's friendship with Roseanne, because the kind of, like, monologues that she does and everything, it's like this very pop culture influence view of, like, Americana, you know, sort of thing. And I feel like she and Roseanne really see eye to eye on that. They both, like, get the same kind of joy from, like, mining that and sort of twisting that and, like, making fun of it, you know, that conception, that, like, 1950s conception of, like, American family kind of stuff.
Yeah. And Roseanne at the time was doing it in these really interesting, like, politically progressive ways, you know, with queer stuff and class, in ways that I think Sandra Bernhard has done, too. I mean, at the time, you know, they're really, like, doing a lot of the same stuff and being really loud. loud about it in different ways, but still, yeah, that's a really good way to connect that.
Well, and Roseanne was talking in their interview about how she respected that so much about Sandra Bernhard, like, about her being more upfront about her sexuality, and just being honest, and, like, she says people were freaking out right and left because they had never heard of anybody being upfront about their sexuality. Oh, I want to get married and have a few kids. That was the bullshit thing they were slinging, but you weren't. That's what she says to Sandra Bernhard in the interview, so she respects that about her when they were trying to bring her in.
Yeah, well, and that makes perfect sense. It's true that I think Sandra Bernhard was out way before most anybody, certainly, like, among white women comics, you know.
Yeah. Well, and she never was trying to fit into a specific type of, like, I mean, you know, she didn't work in movies that much and things, because she didn't want to, like, try and fit herself into a type, like.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty obvious, because, like, obviously her first role in The King of Comedy is so out there. There's no other roles like that, you know, but that's the kind of thing she could do. It's just something really unusual, so she's not going to just be, like, the traditional, like, wacky friend or whatever.
Yeah, take whatever role.
Yeah. It's kind of cool. Like, she was just like, this is my career. I'm going to have my own persona, and I'm going to be myself and not, like, try and fit whatever kind of roles they're casting.
Yeah. And it's interesting that it was, like, a niche that needed to be filled. Like, really, really did. And there's nobody else like her, frankly.
Yeah, there's really not.
Like, nobody does her kind of stand-up, which is, like, funny, like, prose poetry, like, absurdist comedy. Like, it's a lot of things at once. And it's really thoughtful and bizarre and sometimes mean.
Well, and what I like about her is she's, like, simultaneously kind of, like, down-to-earth, but also she inhabits characters. But she's not, like, the type of comedian where she's doing something really bizarre and you can't, like, penetrate her, like, character. I don't know if this makes sense. But just, like, seeing her on Letterman, it's like, she's so down to earth. But then she can launch into, like, these monologues and stuff. But she's not, like, one of those people where everything is a bit. You know, it feels like her personality also.
Yeah. I want to find my, like, niche. Because I said niche earlier and then I said niche. I don't care. I don't care which one.
You could find.
I'm being down to earth right now. Niche. I, as you know, did not get a contract at Pitt, and so I'm, like, partly feeling like, well, I'm definitely sad and offended, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, just, like, feeling all sorts of things. Like, and some parts of me are like, well, maybe this is an opportunity to, like, actually move the fuck on, you know? Because I didn't actually intend to be in Pittsburgh forever, although I like it. You know, but also the job market is so bad in the humanities. And, like, you know, I have a doctorate, and there's so few jobs that, like, even with a PhD, like, I'm not competitive for some of the jobs. So I'm like finding myself feeling really inspired by people who've made something unique from their lives, but also just also sad, because I'm like, teaching is the thing that is like I'm really good at. It is my niche, I think. I mean, I'm not always great at it, but I think I'm pretty good at it.
But, you know, you'll still be able to do it. I'm sure that you will. It's just, like, frustrating when you're already part of something that you want to be part of, and then you have to find your way back in somehow. It's like you can't just stay a part of it.
Yeah.
I often think about that, too. Like, I am definitely inspired by people like Sanna Bernhard who have this sort of, like, carved out their own identity, made their own way. Like, she has a career unlike pretty much anybody else in show business, you know? Like, doing these, I mean, yeah, it's kind of stand-up, but it's also, like, one-woman shows, you know?
Yeah. Like, strange, like, theater art comedy, like, discomfort therapy, exposure therapy, something. Yeah.
Well, and it's cool, because she's been successful for so long, and you have to imagine when she started, people were like, what are you doing exactly? Like, that's not really a thing that people do. And she was probably like, fuck off, I do what I want.
Yeah, I can imagine, like, early audiences watching her and just being, like rapt, because it's so unusual.
Mm-hmm.
She's captivating. Are we done?
Yeah, I think so.
We did not... Listeners, note, we did not discuss the episode in which Roseanne and Muriel Hemingway have a moment, which is also a Nancy-centric episode, because we're going to talk about it in the future.
Yes, so maybe it might be next time. I guess we haven't decided yet, but... But yeah, that's the other really key Nancy episode. There's another one that I watched where Arnie kind of comes back and he wants to get Nancy back, and he's all upset that she's with Marla, and they and the women take a self-defense course, and it's kind of fun, but there's not a whole lot new in that episode. It's more just like Nancy being like, I'm a lesbian now, like, I'm not getting back together with you, and it's not because of you, you know, because he thinks it's like a threat to his masculinity or something. But so it's a pretty good episode for like female empowerment and whatnot, but there's not a whole lot to really discuss, and that one's called Stand on Your Man. But and yeah, the Muriel Hemingway episode is very rich, and there's a lot to discuss there. So
much to discuss.
So any final thoughts on Nancy for now?
Just, you know, God bless Sanna Bernhard.
Yes, indeed. She is a very unique, one-of-a-kind, and inspirational person, and we love her.
That's a damn fact. Okay, well, until next time.
Bye, everyone.
Friends.
Thank you for listening to 714 Delaware Street, with theme music by Matt Schatz and artwork by Emily Zuzak. Please stay tuned for more episodes discussing Roseanne and the Conners.